the former President George Bush. I never met Barbara Bush, so I don't know her. But there's been a lot of very favorable kind of comments on her passing, how she lived her life, what a both very a kind person, grandmotherly figure, but also a very strong person too, somebody who kind of kept that the family very together. So and again, even though I didn't know her, I certainly had a very, very positive image of her as somebody who, one could look up to as somebody who had a great deal of kind of style and class and gentility in the way that she conducted herself, but without in any way being a pushover. So anyway, so that's a kind of sad part of what we remember this week. So let's go right now to our first guest from California, Yolanda Park, who is a program manager with the Environmental Justice Project for Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Stockton. Yolanda Park, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm delighted and I'm going to learn a whole lot, but I got to begin. I got to begin by getting this out of the way. So what's this bird science stuff? Avian science? Come on, what's this all about?
Well, when I was a kid, I've just always loved birds. My mom had a stuffed bird in her classroom. She was a teacher, and it was just fascinating to me, and I grew up loving birds. And then
Did you grow up in California? Did you grow up in California?
I did, yes, in the Central Valley.
So can we say that you're for the birds?
Oh, definitely. I have a
Okay.
bird brain.
Okay. So your mother had a stuffed bird as a teacher.
Yeah, and it just grew from there, just loving birds, and my dad would take me out bird watching and on little field trips, and that was a really special thing to be able to hang out with your dad, and that he shared in that was wonderful.
Was he a bird brain too?
Oh, not as much as me.
Okay.
I was a professional in the
Okay. So, I mean, so you went out and you watched the birds, and I agree with you that kind of being able to spend time with your dad doing something, that's a really, really kind of important factor. So, but I do, okay, so if you're such a kind of big bird person, when you went to college, how come you didn't major in bird science and instead you majored in English?
That's a very simple question to a really long answer. So when I first got there, I thought it was airplanes, like
You thought it was aviation science.
Yeah, exactly. So I started out in animal science, and then when I realized, I was like, "Oh, I should be over there."
That is a great answer. So that's wonderful. That's good. So anyway, so hey, but Yolanda, thanks so much for being with us on Just Love today. So excuse me. So your current work is on the Environmental Justice Project with Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Stockton. So give us just a overview of that. What is that about?
So the program started back in 2005 when California was passing AB 32, which was really groundbreaking legislation to fight climate change and improve air quality. And at the same time, our bishop at the time, he just retired, excuse me, Bishop Stephen Blair felt that it was really essential for the Diocese of Stockton to do something to protect creation and support poor and vulnerable communities, which, as some may know, our Diocese of Stockton has a lot of those, unfortunately, especially here in Stockton
So,
and even more
Yolanda, I mean, we're throughout the nation, and so people are in
so.
different places. So, I think people have some sense of where San Francisco is. People have a sense of where Los Angeles is. So, where's Stockton in compared with either of those big cities?
So Stockton would be about two hours east of San Francisco.
Okay.
And if you know where Sacramento is, it's about an hour south of Sacramento or 7 hours north of L.A.
Okay, so it's kind of more in the San Francisco area. It's in more Northern California.
Yes, definitely Northern California.
Okay. Is that, I mean, you're going to know how geographically challenged I am. Is that anywhere near Napa?
It's about, well, I'd say 2 hours.
Okay.
Or so from Napa.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Going
so
east.
Okay, so it's kind of in that northern area. So okay, so you began to get involved in this, and what were some of the things you've been doing with regard to this environmental justice project?
So the big thing initially was air quality. The Central Valley, according to the American Lung Association, has the worst air quality in the nation, and
that's because you guys got too many. That's because you got too many cars out there, guys.
Well, that's a big part of it. But, you know, a lot of it comes from the Port of Stockton, for example, has a lot of that transportation and, you know, the ships, cargo ships coming in. We have the major highways and arteries of transportation, but a lot of it also comes from agriculture, which is not to say that agriculture is evil, because it's not. It's essential to us.
I like to eat, so agriculture better not be evil.
No, of course not, definitely. But that's the thing, though, is that sometimes people make environmental justice as this us versus them attitude, and it's not. I mean, Pope Francis is wonderful in saying in his encyclical Laudato Si that it has to be this conversation with all stakeholders and all parties.
So we got to all talk about this environmental stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so tell us what you began to do as kind of part of this in order to kind of advance the agency and advance the area to becoming more kind of environmentally friendly.
Sure. So our program has three main concepts that we're looking at, three main goals. And that is education, community organizing, and advocacy. So the education piece is first educating the community, educating parishioners about what is currently happening. What is their current air quality? Where are those sources coming from? And what can people do about it? Because usually when people make that connection between a hospital visit and poor air quality, then that wheel starts turning. Then you start organizing. You start getting people more involved, wanting to do something about it. And then finally, we get to advocacy, where we go to the Capitol and we talk to our representatives, or we go to city council, or we go to the Council of Governments, and we say, look, this is what's happening in our communities. St. Francis of Rome is a wonderful example of that, where our program educated that parish community about, this is what your community looks like. How do you want it to look like? What do you want to see? And they said, well, we would like to see more sidewalks because it's a dangerous crossing area over here. And we're like, great, let's help you with that. And now they're currently in the works of working with Caltrans to get sidewalks for their community.
Now, that's interesting, Yolanda, because I think if you kind of asked somebody walking down the street or in California riding in their car, if you ask them, people wouldn't say sidewalks are an environmental issue. They might say they're a safety issue, but you see it as an environmental issue?
Oh, yes, definitely. And that's the thing right there, is making those connections that we don't originally make at first, and making that connection to environmental justice. So why are sidewalks an EJ issue? Well, many of the poor and vulnerable communities don't have the same transportation access as affluent communities. So they need to be able to walk, they need to be able to bike or take the bus to where they need to go. So sidewalks, yes, definitely a safety issue, but it's also an EJ issue, because if a community cannot safely walk to the grocery store or to their schools, that's an EJ issue. If this community can't,
Yolanda, I know you say that, but say a little bit more, because I'm not seeing it that way.
Here's the other thing too.
Here's what I want to do. I want you to help you fulfill your first part of educating me, and maybe we'll educate a lot of the listeners who are out there in kind of making that connection. I'm not saying it's not an important issue, but it seems to me you're making everything into the environment.
Oh yeah, everything's interconnected, most definitely.
But if everything, then nothing is.
Pope Francis is great in saying that, but here, let me back up. Let me try a different tactic. So many families and individuals, especially in poor and vulnerable communities, are more concerned about how to feed themselves, right?
Right.
How to get health care. And in this day and age, especially not being separated because of deportation. Okay, all these things add to stress. And stress deteriorates health, and it can lead to lashing out and anger. Okay, so if we have, which then promotes violence and leads to a fear of safety. Now, here's the thing. If you have a family who is suffering from asthma because of poor air quality, not that they know that the air quality is poor, but that would be the reason why. If they're suffering from asthma, they go to the hospital, they have to pay a bill. If they can't afford that bill, then that leads to that stress and that anger that I was talking about. And then that leads to violence. And that, I mean, when people are stressed, they get, you know, it's hard to focus on what it is you need to do. It's hard to focus on getting food on the table.
So here's where you got me.
Started
yeah.
with poor air quality.
Yeah, but I think I get the fact that poor air quality can cause asthma, and I think that's real.
And here's another thing that poor air quality does. The reason why it's so dangerous to health is because it's made
because everybody breathes it.
2.5. It's particulate matter 2.5, which means it's smaller than a single strand of hair. That gets into your bloodstream, and that gets into the lungs, to the heart. And if you're pregnant, which I don't think you would be,
nope.
But for women who are, it can get to the baby. It travels through to the fetus because it's in the bloodstream. And so this doesn't just cause asthma. It doesn't just cause problem with the lungs. It can cause problems with your brain, cardiovascular problems. And that's why it's such a huge problem and such a huge issue, a health issue.
So tell me, how many parishes in Stockton, in the diocese?
There's, I believe, about 34.
Okay. So you talked about St. Francis of Rome. After these years, kind of how successful do you think you've been in kind of educating the parishioners in the diocese?
I would say, you know, I mean, nothing is stopping, you know, everything's ongoing, and we have been pretty successful. Last year, for 2017, we served approximately about 1,080 people, and that includes everything that I was saying about education, community organizing, and bringing people to the Capitol. We just had a huge event in February called Equity on the Mall, where we brought parishioners to the Capitol to talk about these issues with their peers, with other people who attended, and with and hearing the legislators talk about these issues. And so we provide that voice, that Valley voice, along with several of our partner organizations all up and down the Valley.
So, Yolanda, what have you found, Yolanda, as kind of some of the biggest obstacles, or what are the things that kind of get in the way of being able to kind of educate more widely about these important environmental issues?
Oh, goodness. Okay, so I would say one of our biggest challenges is interest, because of the issues I spoke of beforehand about trying to put food on the table. I mean, trying to get people to see those connections and understand that by doing one, working on one issue will help. I mean, it's not going to, you know, it's not a miracle thing, but it will help solve these other issues. That's where we get a lot of opposition from, is trying to get people out of their bubbles, out of their comfort zone, and working on this issue of air quality or land. It could be land use or water quality as well.
So in the work that you've done in a variety of parishes, sometimes when, you know, we're working with people in different areas, we find that there's kind of a hook that really gets people's interest, and then we can sometimes move on to other issues. In the area of environment and environmental justice, have you found in your work over the years, is there a particular issue or two that people kind of do resonate or get more interested in than some of the others?
I would say air quality, because it's a little more visible than, say, water or land use.
And probably because, as I said before, because California is probably the mecca of automobiles and automobile driving, it's probably something that people, you know, can relate to more easy than some of the other issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
All right. So what's the next project you're going to be working on?
Oh, well, we got several.
Okay.
which one should I give you?
Oh, well, because I have I don't have a good attention span. Tell me the one that's most interesting.
Well, we just put in, or we're about to put in a grant application to do some more air quality work with the Port of Stockton, which is, it's a disadvantaged community, according to Cal EnviroScreen, and anybody can look that up. Just Google Cal EnviroScreen, and it brings up a map. And so the Port of Stockton has about a population of around 6,000, and they're in the higher 100 percentile of pollution burden. So what we're hoping to do is start reaching out to that community, first placing them in context, like how do they see themselves? What is their culture, their attitude about, you know, themselves and their neighborhood? And then begin that education process, the community organizing, and then advocacy. And we hope to see that community have air monitoring systems at some point.
Okay. You know, the thing that's most surprising to me about the whole this, when you told me Stockton is 200 miles kind of or 2 hours east of San Francisco, that wouldn't put it on the ocean, would it?
No.
But it's still
San Francisco is on the coast.
But it's still it's still a port.
Yeah, it's the Delta.
Okay.
We have the Delta Triangle here.
All right. So, Yolanda, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about environmental justice. And I'm delighted with, thank you for the work that you're doing. That's very important. And I'm glad that you went bird watching with your dad and got you interested in the environmental issues. So thanks so much for being with us on Just Love and the best with your work.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Hey, Tom, we're delighted that that Yolanda was with us, and I think right now we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll kind of continue our conversation on Just Love. You can follow me on the Just Love blog.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRK Sullivan, and you can learn a little bit more about the topics that we talk about. This is Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
And I'm a huge believer in a loving God. I pray, George and I pray every night out loud. And sometimes we fight over whose turn it is, but we do.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. You can check out some of the same topics we talk about at justloveblog.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. You know, it's interesting. It sounds so basic, but the whole idea of prayer as being something that is so fundamental to our humanity. And I say that it's fundamental to our humanity. It's not fundamental merely to religion, but because we're made in God's image and likeness of God. And there's a natural tendency of us to be open to God and yearning for God, that prayer is just so absolutely critical. And in a week or so, we're going to be speaking about Pope Francis's encyclical on holiness. And in that, he talks a little bit about prayer, how you can't be holy without prayer. And one of the things intriguing, I'll show you a kind of a personal thing that was part of my last Easter. So my cousin's son has a now three-year-old daughter. And she now is leading the family in prayer at Easter. She was the one who kind of led us in prayer and did the traditional prayer about bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts, which we are about to receive from thy bounty through Christ our Lord. Amen. And so I think that was just a wonderful kind of continuation of a family tradition and teaching at a very early age the importance of prayer. I said we'd try and we will. We're going to listen now to a clip of Barbara Bush, who just passed away, about her faith in God and prayer as part of her life. Let's listen to her kind of talking very gently about that topic.
And I'm a huge believer in a loving God. I pray, George and I pray every night out loud. And sometimes we fight over whose turn it is, but we do. And I have no fear of death, which is a huge comfort because we're getting darn close. And I don't have a fear of death for my precious George or for myself, because I know.
Isn't that just such a marvelous kind of expression of faith? And, you know, it's such a profound expression of faith, but it's a profound expression of faith that isn't over the top. And what I mean by that is sometimes it appears that if you're not shouting, if you're not all emotional, that you really don't have that deep kind of faith. Well, I think what is there is an incredibly solid, passionate sense of the presence of God in her life. And I thought it was marvelous when she talked about how the eagerness to kind of pray with her husband, the former president, kind of led sometimes that who was wanted to pray more and who got to lead the prayer. And, you know, I do remember there's that from, I think it is, sometimes I remember this from the Old Testament. I think it's the Song of Songs or the Canticles, where they talk about the two newlyweds kind of praying before they, on their wedding night, before they go to bed together. And, you know, it's a kind of a wonderful thing. And I think in the world we live in, that there is, I would, without fear of too much contradiction, saying we could do with a lot more prayer and maybe a little bit less talking at one another, around one another, shouting at each other. You know, a little bit of calming prayer is really, really good. And I think one of the things that we live in this really hectic world, and sometimes I think we maybe feel a little bit embarrassed or a little bit lazy if we pray, because there's a part of our world that we're always supposed to be doing something. We're texting, we're getting messages, we're going from this place to another place, we're sending an email, we're doing something. We always have to be active. And I think there's a little bit of a feeling sometimes, well, if I'm not doing any of those things, boy, maybe I'm a little bit lazy. And so just sitting, kneeling, praying can maybe sometimes see a little bit like, oh, I guess I should be doing something else. And boy, that can be the most important time that we spend in a day, just spending time listening to God, talking to God. And sometimes I say, and I share it with you listeners out there, is that, you know, if I don't have anything to say in a particular day, I can just sit there and I'll say to God, okay, your turn. You should kind of be talking to me about certain things, and your wisdom is better than my wisdom. So just being quiet and allowing God to speak to us can be a very, very kind of important part of our prayer. And no way is it a waste of time when we do that. So anyway, I think that's an interesting, I'm so delighted that we were able to kind of play that clip from Barbara Bush, who passed away this past week. You know, we were talking about the, you know, the environment. And one of the things about Pope Francis's letter was he doesn't merely talk about the environment and we got to save the environment, but he makes that connection that environmental problems oftentimes impact the poor more than they do other segments of society. And Tom, there's a little bit of news about how Hurricane Harvey in the Gulf Coast was affecting the poor there. Tom, is there a little news on that?
Sure, Monsignor. Well, you know, I mean, hurricanes come, they don't care if they're rich or they're poor, but that doesn't mean that every person is equally vulnerable to a storm. Low-income families are much more likely to live in flood-prone areas, Monsignor, with deficient infrastructure. Hurricane Harvey, as you mentioned, is an example of the pattern. Large parts of Houston flooded. Low-income neighborhoods fared far worse than the wealthier areas. According to Robert Bullard, who is professor of urban planning and environment at Texas Southern University in Texas, he said low-income communities and communities of color don't get necessarily protections when it comes to flood control. Poverty is a risk factor when it comes to extreme weather. Houston, of course, being a southern city, generally the way the city has grown is that housing and residential patterns emerged that were often based on race and class lines. Discriminatory housing policies also restricted, or in some cases confined, poor people or people of color to less desirable areas when it came to flooding. And when Ballard went said he spends that he admitted that Houston spends much more money on infrastructure than wealthier communities, but he said that low-income communities tend to lack features that would be necessary for flood control. For example, some of the subsidized housing in the area was built on many of Houston's 100-year floodplains. And designated as a high-risk zone by FEMA. If you go to some areas in low-income areas, he went on to say, there is no drainage system or other very crude open ditches, so that when it floods, a lot of low-income areas, the water just runs into open ditches and the ditches then overflow. The other areas have much more sophisticated flood control systems.
Well, again, I was in Houston, probably a couple months ago, and I visited one of those poorer areas, and it's absolutely true that those areas have a harder time coming back. And one of the issues, and I think we all can relate to this, you know, sometimes what we need in the world is a little bit of what I say redundancy. In other words, you have to have more than one option to deal with something, and oftentimes poor people don't have more than one option. And the thing that I think of is, for example, people who have a certain amount of money, if the bus is down or if the train or subway is down, they might be able to take a cab. They might be able to take an Uber to get where they need to go. But sometimes if it's in a very poor neighborhood And the person doesn't have that. If the bus doesn't work or the train doesn't work, well, they're stuck. They don't have another way to get there. Or maybe they do spend the money on taking an Uber, but then they have less money to spend on food at the end of the month. So I think that's a point to remember, that there's not a kind of a redundancy, and that sometimes hurts poor people more than it hurts others. Let's take a break, and then we're going to go back to speak about America's parish church, St. Patrick's Cathedral, and we're going to speak about what they did to make the cathedral environmentally friendly when it came to air conditioning and heating. We're going to be speaking with Luel Poliafito, who is the director of development there. But right now we'll take a break. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Well, we're talking about environmental issues this week, and Earth Day has been around for a while now, and in just a moment we're going to be speaking with Luel Poliafito, who is the Director of Development of St. Patrick's Cathedral, and we're going to speak with him about this fancy new air conditioner heater they put in the cathedral that's supposedly all this better, but he's going to have to convince me that it's a better thing to do. But we'll speak with him in just a minute. But the one thing I do, one of the things I want to comment on, because I think it's something we need to reflect on. You know, recently there was the use of chemical weapons in Syria, and then there was the response of the United States and France and England in some rocket attacks to that. And I'll just share with you my perspective on this. It certainly seems to me that as a world, that when somebody uses chemical weapons or such, there does need to be a response. And, you know, I understand issues of national sovereignty. I understand all of this type of stuff. But it does seem to me that the world just can't stand by and say it's okay to do things which are really beyond the pale. And so I guess from my perspective, it seems to me that that the response by the United States, France, and England probably was a pretty good response. And one of the reasons I say that is because it got criticized by a lot of people. I mean, it got criticized from those who said, well, you know, it didn't do much because it was so little, it was so restrained, and like, so what good is it going to do? Well, that says to me it was restrained, so it was a limited. And then other people said, well, we shouldn't have done it at all because, like, who are we to do that? And so I guess from my perspective, it does point out to me, which we've talked about here, that we need to develop more from our Catholic social perspective, how we view the issues of war and peace. And the fact is that the traditional just war theory, which I think has served us very well and still has a lot of life in it, certainly doesn't cover a lot of the reality of the world that we live in. Certainly, I would, when that was developed, centuries ago, nobody was dealing with chemical warfare. They weren't dealing with nuclear warfare. They weren't dealing with the type of terrorism we're dealing with now. So my plea to people is we still need to use that just war framework with the reminder that the whole purpose of the just war was basically to say that we shouldn't have war, that the presumption was that you should not go to war, but there are some rare situations in which we do need to use force to respond to evil that we come across. So, ironically, the just war theory was against war, except in these very limited cases. So I think that's something that we need to develop even further, given where we are. And then, you know, my feeling, my judgment is very clear. We have not accomplished any mission in the world in which chemical weapons are used, in which bombs are used to respond to that. We have a lot to do to accomplish a mission in which we need a world in which chemical weapons are not used, where we figure out other ways to respond to evil and wrong than dropping bombs. And I suspect we're going to have a long time to do that. But we need to make our world more peaceful. We need to make it more just. We talk about this all the time. And, you know, right now, there are more refugees in the world than the entire population of New York State. I mean, there are like about 19 million or 20 million people in New York State. There are 23 million refugees. I mean, that's like the whole state has been thrown out and has to go someplace else. So anyway, enough of this. Let's go back to talking about the environment. And I'm delighted that Luau Poliafito, the Director of Development at St. Patrick's Cathedral, is with us. Did I say your last name right?
It's a beautiful job. Thank you.
Your first name is better. Luau. Well, thank you so much. Hey, for our listeners, let me tell you, if you ever need a tour guide of St. Patrick's Cathedral, Luau's your man. He does a great job in pointing out the beauty of St. Patrick's Cathedral. And for those of, probably, I think, Luau, probably, what are there, about 17 people in the United States who have not visited St. Patrick's Cathedral on their way to New York, London, Paris, Singapore?
That's correct. I would say it's a small portion. So many people are coming every year.
So you probably know this, just to give our listeners a sense. What do you estimate how many people come into St. Patrick's Cathedral every year?
Yeah, we estimate about 5 million visitors.
Woo! Yeah. That's a lot of people.
And a lot of them are not just national, but internationally coming through.
Oh, well, that's 5 million people. That's a lot of people that come into the cathedral. You know, how long have you been there?
I've been there 6 years.
So more or less the same, or is it getting more or less or whatever?
Throughout the restoration and through now, we've not seen a decrease. It's been a constant pilgrimage spot.
So you know what they say about New York, which I found it interesting, is that depending on the world economy, everybody says, well, are there people coming or whatever? What I've been told by people who study this a little bit, New York is a real kind of magnet for tourists from throughout the world. But what changes is depending on what's going on in different countries. So if there's a little bit of an economic downturn in a particular country, you don't get as many from that country because they don't have the resources, but you'll get more from another country. It's an intriguing kind of intriguing phenomenon in New York.
And that is true at the cathedral. You could see that the visitors are changing what culture they're coming from.
Yeah. So anyway, so come on. This is Earth Week. We got this, and we got a Pope who's big into this environmental stuff. So what'd your boss decide that he wanted to get on the train and you did this fancy type of stuff? Why don't you just put an air conditioner in the window? Come on, tell me about what you did at the cathedral.
Well, I think that this came before the movement, especially the Laudato Si', before that came out. Cardinal Dolan, roundtable group of people at the cathedral came to this plan way before Pope Francis was our new Pope.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was...
You know what I say all the time, and I'm willing to be quoted on this. I say, thank God they elected Pope Francis, but he was the second best candidate after Cardinal Dolan.
Yeah,
and you can tell Cardinal Dolan I said that, okay?
I will make sure. Yeah. But I think what the choice was, that this was the most sustainable, cost-effective, and long-term energy option.
Okay.
So they went with the geothermal plant.
Okay.
So a big fancy air conditioner in the window would probably drain more energy than this system.
So let me ask you this question. I'm not asking you to reveal stuff, confidential stuff. But it seems to me that sometimes you want to do something that helps the environment because you want it to help the environment. Some other times you say, no, I'm going to do this because this is a more economical way to do it, cheap. So in the conversations, what was your sense of the conversations about how much of it was kind of concerned with the environment and how much like, well, let's just get the best heating cooling system?
I think it was always a perfect mixture of both of those.
Okay.
What is good for the environment? What could make our footprint smaller? And what is efficient in cost?
Right.
And when you think about the cathedral's not going anywhere, there's a long-term plan that needed to be put in place. And the geothermal plant fits a long-term plan.
Okay. So can you give our listeners a little bit of, and talk to me, because I'm a dummy when it comes to these things. So tell me what this means. You put big poles in the ground and you mine heat and you mine cold. Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, so the simplest thing to think of is that, think of a well, and we have 10 of these wells at the cathedral.
Like an ordinary well that goes down and gets the water?
Correct, think something similar to that.
Okay.
And in that we have pipes that are going down into those wells that go back to our plant that's below the parish house. And these pipes go through the cathedral, go through the archbishop's residence, goes through the parish house. It's heating and cooling the air and the water that we use every day. So they're pumping the water down to the well to either heat it up to about 60 degrees or to cool it down to 60 degrees, and then it comes back up. And if it needs to be heated a little bit more, there's a additional machine that is doing that additional heating and putting that water into our heating system, and then fan coils are blowing the heat, or if it was cold water, blowing the coolness into the cathedral.
Wow. So again, I don't know anything about this stuff. So I'm listeners, I'm getting smart. I hope you're getting smart too with regard to. So the water that kind of you take out of the ground, what temperature is that?
It's roughly between like 55 and 60 degrees.
Oh, so you don't got to do too much to it to get it to 60.
That's correct.
Oh, that's pretty good. So that must be a little bit efficient.
A lot efficient. It's about 20 to 30% more efficient.
Okay. Yeah. So, but you got another machine that's like heating and maybe sometimes cooling the water? Is that what?
Not more, I think more of heating,
right?
Just to get to that extra level of heating that we might may call for, depending on the season.
But you got to get it to 60 anyway. If it's 55, you got to get it to there.
Correct.
And how is the machine or whatever that does that, how is that powered?
I think that's electric. It's energy efficient as well.
Okay, but so you need some traditional stuff. It's not like those pneumatic tubes where it kind of you get it up to a certain height and it does it by itself.
Correct. There is some additional work involved.
Right. So in terms of the efficiency, and I think a lot of people, you know, say this and they think about this. And they say, well, you know, this environmental stuff is really nice, but it's very expensive. And, you know, I think our listeners can figure this out. If, you know, if you save a dollar, and I'm going to be absurd for this for a moment. If you put in a new system and you save a dollar a year, well, if you say, oh, it's efficient over a million years because I'm going to make my money back. Is there a little premium or is the payback time, is it efficient quickly or do you have to over time?
I'm not really sure of the answer on the short term, but I do know that immediately we've decreased our footprint of carbon dioxide that's being released in the emissions. And we're saving about 94,000 pounds of carbon emissions, which is about 218 barrels of oil a year being saved.
Okay, that's pretty good. That is good. Now, from your perspective, because you work there every day and stuff like that, how long has it been operative?
It's been up for over a year.
Okay.
It's been, there was a backup system put in place just in case.
Right.
Because no one knew how the system was going to activate or how it was going to react to certain things, especially on the coldest day or the warmest day, what would be needed. And through all of this winter, we never had to go up to that backup system. Everything, the system that we have in place, the geothermal plant, is running efficiently. I mean, it's amazing to think that throughout the cathedral and through the parish house and cardinal's residence, there are all these little meters that are taking temperature, are measuring, have different measurements for different pressures, and are feeding this all back to the geothermal plant so it could prepare how to react.
Wow, that is, and it worked for the whole winter.
And the summer.
Yeah, and the summer, Now, you know, you've lived there, you work there, you've been there. In New York, everybody complains about building heat. They complain that in the winter, the building's too cold, in the summer, it's too warm. Have you noticed any difference?
It's been more stable than in previous years where we didn't have this system, which is nice.
So we only have a couple of more minutes left. I think that's great. Anything you want our listeners to know, doesn't have to be about this heating plant, about St. Patrick's Cathedral?
Well, on the green idea, you know, there are a lot of other things that a company or a person could do in their home.
Right.
I mean, Monsignor Ricci has pushed that at the cathedral to reduce how much paper we're using, to figure out new cost, not just cost saving, but green saving ideas. We eliminated personal printers. We went to having copy machines in certain places that everyone would attach to. It decreased our ink usage, paper usage. We've also added energy efficient light bulbs and energy saving machinery. So all of these things add up and are more easy to do than buying a geothermal plant.
That is great. Well, thank you so much for being with us. And I learned a whole lot about this. And I think I want to compliment Monsignor Ricci, Cardinal Dolan, and you and all of the people, because to some extent, this isn't a, like, you know, 40-year-old technology. This is a little bit new, and it kind of takes a little bit of faith to say this is gonna work.
I agree. It does take faith to go down a new route.
Yeah, and I bet you, a couple of people crossing their fingers saying, gee, I hope we didn't make a multi-million-dollar mistake, and we hope that it works. So
yeah, and I hope that your listeners would want to come by and see what the temperature feels like when they're in New York.
All right, so here's the deal, listeners. 5 million last year, we want 6 million 6 million visitors to St. Patrick's Cathedral next year.
Are they welcome? They are welcome. Okay, the doors are always open.
That's good. And actually, if you walk by Fifth Avenue, you can actually look in now because there are glass doors, so you can look in almost all day because the doors are open now.
Yeah, and that glass, those glass doors keep the heating and cooling in.
Ah, so it all works together.
It all works together.
All works
Bigger
together.
Plan ahead of us.
Great.
Thank you so much, and happy Earth Day.
Thank you. Thanks so much. So we've been talking about the environment, and you know, I kid about the environment, and we kid about tree huggers, we kid about those things, but it is critically important that we do take care of the earth. One of our Catholic Charities agencies, which works in the Bronx, and there's a little old river called the Bronx River there, which has been very, very polluted and not used well. And they're part of a coalition there that now they're cleaning up the Bronx River and fish are back in it and things like that. You know, one of our areas in New York City, a lot of asthma there because the air quality there is not good. So, you know, it is about people. It's not just about the air, but it's how do we kind of preserve our environment and the earth so that people can live and be sustained and not pick up illnesses that are there. So it's Earth Day, and we're happy to kind of have raised that up as an important issue. And, Pope Francis, I think, did a very good job in talking about how the environment and those issues do relate to people and they impact lives. So, you know, we prayed for Barbara Bush this week. A lot going on. Please join us again next week on Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.